Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
I would hope at the end of the day, when you would sit back and look, that the Democrats said they would never negotiate, that it'd just be a clean debt ceiling. I think those in America would say, good job. You know what? It's not that. So when you talk to your grandchildren, what are you going to tell them? You know what? There's hope. There's hope because they finally woke up that they got a spending problem. There's hope because there's people who are willing to do something about it, but not just do something about it, but fight for them. So what I want to tell you, the American people, I will not give up on you. This won't solve all the problems, but this is the first step, and I'm going to come back the next day and get the next step. So I would hope that we could get everybody on both sides out to vote for it, to actually put their partisanship aside and think of the grandchildren. Think of that child born today that got a $94,000 bill. How can you sit there and say, oh, I'm going to spend more of their money? Let's stop that. Let's make this economy stronger. Let's take care of the debt that we acquired, because we have a responsibility to pay it. And let's stop doing this by the deadline, worrying whether we're going to make it.
Well, they're not going to make it. Here's a major problem with this. One of the things that I saw already is that Democrats are trying to hold it all off because they are insistent that there be the inclusion of quote-unquote student loan debt, what they call relief. They're actually insisting that this be included in this bill, and that's like one of the big reasons why they don't, I mean, the Democrats apparently are not wanting to come to the table because it's not being included. Welcome to the program. Your hostess, Dana Lash, here with you. The nationally syndicated Radio First program, simulcast second, that you can find on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. And this, because I was looking at some of this here, so they're saying that they're going to veto, well, and by they, I mean Joe Biden, they're saying that they're going to veto this measure that is going to, because Republicans have been trying to block this student loan debt relief, right? And so the Hill had reported that the administration, they're going to do everything that they can to try to thwart it. Now, here's the issue, because I went and I looked this stuff up because apparently people in the media don't want to do this. So here's the big issue with the student loan debt and the narrative that's going around about this. And this is from the OMB. So this is from the Office of Management and Budget. The problem with the narrative on student loan debt, you're having the president and the Democrat Party who wants to risk defaulting on debt so that the upper crust can have their grad school, their graduate school loans paid off, essentially. That's what this is. There are a couple of things. I mean, when it came out, we talked about the Wharton School's survey of this plan and how 70% of the debt relief actually goes towards the borrowers in the top 60% of the income brackets. Now, here's the crazy thing about it. When you look at the number of people in, you know, people who are undergrads, people who are in grad school, and I tweeted about this a little bit earlier as well, the largest percentage, you have a total of 56% of student loan debt that is actually held by people who went to grad school. Less than 20%, it's about 20% that's owned by PhDs. So you have the majority of the student loan debt and it's 56%. That's the Office of Management and Budget. They discovered that it's 56% of student loan debt that's held by grad school folks, and how 70% of the debt, quote unquote, relief goes to those who borrowed, who are in the top 60% of the income distribution. That's the truth of it. And Joe Biden wants to completely risk defaulting on debt for this, according to The Hill. Just wondering. They want to pay off their it's a voter payoff is what it is. I mean, they're paying off votes. It's exactly what it is. And so The Hill's reporting that, well, they're going to block any measure that's going to undo this, any measure at all whatsoever. They're going to block it. So, I mean, if they want to collapse this whole thing over that, I'm fine with that. Go ahead. The White House said that they have concerns with the House resolution. 20,000, they're looking at relief for all of these eligible student loan borrowers. But so when I just gave you the percentages of all this. Now think about this. You're talking about people in lower incomes who are subsidizing the bougie education of people in higher income brackets. That's ultimately what this comes down to. That goes after the middle class, just like he said he wasn't going to do. Just like he said he wasn't going to do. So that's kind of the latest with this. I hope the whole damn thing falls apart and an asteroid obliterates this godforsaken rock to the hell it belongs. I'm done. Done. Whew. So this, we deserve it, honestly, at this point. So they had some discussions. I think they had like short discussions, McCarthy and Biden the other day. Yesterday they had short discussions, but I mean, they haven't come to any kind of agreement. Meanwhile, 3 out of 4 believe the economy is in poor condition. A whopping 76% believe that the economy is in a poor condition, according to a new poll. Only 24% indicated the economy was in good shape. Yet they want more taxes. They want more taxes. Down 30% in April. Yes, people are pessimistic because it's a fecal hole. That's what this is. Stop spending. I mean, how many billions did, what was the last type that we gave? How much money did we give last to Ukraine, to money launder?
Did you hear how the Pentagon or the Defense Department, they found?
Oh, yeah, they lost billion. Money, and then they said, oh, it's okay,
yeah,
and then they found some.
Billion. We can send it to Ukraine with equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get me started with the amount of money we sent there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. So this is also, I think, another example. This is an end run around Congress and doing something like this. This is just not gonna pass. None of this is gonna pass. He tried to do it. He tried to threaten it with an executive order. That wasn't gonna work. They're trying to shove this through Congress. They're talking about other executive directives they can take if Congress doesn't act the way they want them to. So I mean, it is what it is. But I just don't see something. Nothing like that's gonna pass the House. Nothing like that would pass the House. Especially, I mean, you're talking about spending more money and saddling everybody else with debt that they didn't accrue at a time when inflation has already made it worse for everybody. Golly. Now, McCarthy, in the meantime, a couple of things. They keep saying, oh, he doesn't have a lot of room to maneuver. He's already maneuvered. They already passed a bill through the House. You have to have Democrats come together and choose to negotiate on it. Either you want to sit around with your thumbs up your butts and, you know, sit here and talk about pronouns, or you want to actually get to work of the business of the people. And so McCarthy tried to sound optimistic. I think he has every reason to be optimistic. I mean, you have one party who wants to saddle everybody else with additional spending and debt, and another party who's saying, please, can we just stop the spending a little bit? Then you have another party that's saying, if we don't get what we want, we're going to try to unconstitutionally bastardize the 14th Amendment as a way to spend more. Not going to happen. Now, a few other things that we're following, because I've got some wokery. We've got IRS, because a new IRS whistleblower letter is claiming that the DOJ is interfering in the crack baby investigations, the Hunter Biden President McUnity, Crack Mc. I have kids with how many baby mamas out there in the world? Hunter Biden, the white trash that is the family in the White House. It is. You can get mad at me for saying it, but I'm 1,000% correct. That's the, and the reason that people get mad that I say it is because it's true. And the madder they get, the truer that is. You know, I don't know if you knew that or not. But this came out yesterday. Well, a couple of sources. There, I have a couple of different sources for this. IRS agents, one of them said, yeah, you know, there's some retaliation happening here. You had the attorneys, we told you last week they removed the entire investigative team, how the FBI was trying to withhold important documents. They're saying that this, you know, interference in this goes back to essentially the beginning of the investigation. I'm not surprised. Are you surprised? Not at all. And there's still, this is all getting buried because of the debt ceiling, Democrat stunts on that, the NAACP issuing this stupid travel advisory. We were talking a little bit about that yesterday. You know what? I to touch on this for a moment, because I spoke about this on Jesse Waters' program yesterday. What really gets me about this, and I made this point last night, is that you have, because there's this, DeSantis is expected to announce this week, NAACP is freaking out because the Democrats are telling them to freak out. Democrats don't have any solutions. They don't have any policy proposals. So they have to sit here and invoke the specter of race to go out and scare everyone into thinking that, well, you know, this is what's going to happen if you don't keep voting for Democrats. I mean, it's fear mongering. I mean, it's race baiting fear mongering. So the NAACP goes out and says that they're issuing a travel advisory, despite the fact that the chairman of said NAACP lives in Tampa, Florida, which I find fascinating. And they're upset because state of Florida, the lawmakers and the governor decided that they were not going to allow the College Board to sneak in queer theory and Marxist theory and pass it off as education in advanced placement classes. And what a lot of people don't know is that the College Board was not allowing anyone to look at what the proposed curriculum included. So no one knew what in the hell they were proposing to teach. Not only did the College Board refuse to be transparent about what the curriculum actually was, but the College Board also was refusing to even share which educational institutions were already teaching this curriculum. You guys didn't know that, did you? So are you supposed to sit here and sign off on a sale of goods without knowing what the hell you're getting? Because that's exactly what the College Board was demanding. I have a lot of receipts. I'm totally open to drowning people by shoving them down their throats. Just say the word. We have a lot to get into because we've got all of this. We have more primary posturing. I have some ridiculous cases of media bias, including someone who is walking like a Clydesdale down some stairs demanding that Governor Ron DeSantis tell them who his favorite Disney character is. So we're going to get into all of that. Summer is almost here, and Good Ranchers wants to give you what you've been craving, a beautiful, tasty steak for the grill. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. I like how everything comes vacuum sealed and it all tastes great. Every cut is sourced from local American farms and is hand-cut, trimmed, and aged to perfection. Good Ranchers is proud to be your trusted source for high-quality all-American meat. Visit goodranchers.com and pick your box. They have ribeye, New York strip, all-natural burgers, and all the delicious chicken you could ever want. Plus, it's all $30 off with my code DANA. This is the perfect time of year to easily change the way you buy meat. Visit goodranchers.com and use my code DANA for $30 off of any box. And make this summer one to remember with American meat delivered right to your door from goodranchers.com. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. Use my code DANA for $30 off at goodranchers.com today.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I know this comes as great shock to you, but TikTok has confirmed that Chinese engineers from Beijing actually write their source code. And I know that you guys are totally shocked by this. So shocked. I hope you didn't drive off the road if you were listening in your vehicle, if your auto manufacturer hasn't banned it like a fascist yet. But I'm just FYI, I'm just wanting you just so you guys know. Because originally they were told it's not possible. Oh, but look, it's not only possible, it's existent. I think we may come back to this. Because the people were concerned about the backdoor access, you know. Tragedy in California. I cannot even believe this. This is something, like, I would have helped these ducks. A heroic California father was killed He was rammed into by a car after he was trying to help a family of ducks cross the road. His helpless children watched. It was a stupid, moronic 17-year-old barreling down Stanford Ranch Boulevard in Rockland. And another family and his kids also witnessed it. No arrests have been made. But a 17-year-old woman driver was killed this dude, just plowed right into him. I mean, he was literally, it looks like it was at an intersection as well. And he was just like simply helping them. He was legit in like, and according to the photos, he was in the crosswalk section. How are there no arrests made? You know, pull head from butt, then drive. It's that easy. My gosh, if I, man, I'm not even gonna speak. It's just horrible. But yeah, I mean, pay attention to where you're going, people, because now this 17-year-old has ruined an entire family's life, and her life is ruined because of one stupid thing that she did. Now she's got to pay the consequences for it. Also, this is kind of, remember when they were saying that there wasn't going to be a baby boom, and now apparently there might be? So Axios says remote work may have fueled a baby boom, particularly amongst U.S. women. Economists were predicting a crash in birth rates. And on the outset, they were saying that actually nothing really looks like it changed. But now they're saying that this is the first recession where we're actually seeing birth rates go up. It was a professor at Northwestern University who co-authored this study with another professor whose name we don't care about at UCLA and someone else we don't care about. But the results of that actually are interesting. So look at that. Mm. Everyone's watching. Ron DeSantis has changed his Twitter handle. I know. So he's updated his handle. Instead of just like Ron DeSantis FL, it's now Ron DeSantis. And his team also changed the FL. Oh, whoa, what's happening? I love like this is like how we watch. They, did you change your handle? I mean, things that would not have made sense 20 years ago. The Supreme Court has punted a Section 230 debate back to Congress, which they should, because this isn't really for the Supreme Court to legislate from the bench. It was a case that was coming up before SCOTUS. We are in SCOTUS season. They've kicked it back to the courts. We have a lot more in store. Stick with us. Wokery and more after this. Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation and astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188. 887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
How is retail theft affecting inflation? Target says they've lost almost $1 billion in inventory, and this is just Target. But did Target lose money, or did you? Corporations don't pay taxes because their customers pay those taxes and what they buy, driving the prices way up. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
It's beyond the norm. And if you describe this as a negotiation of both sides issue, you're misleading the public. Because Republicans see have this button here that they push, and it's crashed the economy. So they can say, hey, you don't provide billions for a border wall, we're going to push this button and crash.
This is so stupid. I didn't want to listen to it.
You don't go to agree to these devastating cuts.
He's one of the dumbest people in the elected office.
100,000 jobs to be lost. We're going to push this button here and crash the economy.
We're going to crash the economy.
This is not a negotiation.
Dude, this is Ted Lieu. Hey, wasn't his friend the guy who had Twinks back to his apartment?
Yes, actually.
By the way, I got an update on Luggage Twink. Yeah, don't let me forget that. Welcome. Yeah, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. your mean, hateful curmudgeon today. I'm going to kick everybody in the shins. Bottom of this first hour. That's Ted Lieu. It's hostage taking. They literally passed a bill that you guys don't want to look at. So how is this hostage taking? Anybody? Beeler?
It's not.
It's actually not hostage taking, but I mean, you can keep calling that if you'd like, but that's not actually what it is at all. It's not hostage taking. Literally it was like a month ago. They proposed a budget compromise, put it through. It's all, you know, and they're the ones who just don't want to come to the table and have the conversation. And the media is running with us. They're running with us. So I have a couple of other things that we need to make sure that we're touching on, because there's a couple. We got some GOP primary stuff. We were talking about the debt ceiling, all of this, law and order. Speaking of law and order. So Daniel Penny spoke out, said that he wasn't a racist, that he's not a bad guy, because he's not a bad guy. I mean, it's a shame that he's got to say this after he stepped up and made sure that he was protecting innocent people last night, on the platform at the subway. This was last night. So it was late. It was updated this morning. Jordan Neely's uncle, Christopher Neely, was arrested. This was yesterday. News broke last night after being caught with stolen credit cards and a knife. So he was the uncle who called for no plea deal for Daniel Penny over the chokehold death. So he was arrested. He was caught with a knife and a bunch of stolen credit cards. And he was the guy who went out and said, if Daniel Penny gets a plea deal, he's probably going to go and kill another guy on the subway. That's what he was telling the press. Where's the media on this? Just wondering. So this all broke out yesterday. It sounds like the Neely family's got some issues that they might want to address within their own family. He has an extensive criminal record. He's got over 70 prior arrests. He's had 2 active warrants out for his arrest. And this was at the time of his apprehension yesterday. So he shouldn't get a plea deal. He's going to do it again. Do what again? He literally has had no record at all whatsoever. He's had no record at all whatsoever. What are you talking about? But hey, so this is... The family had hired this very fancy PR firm. And the PR firm was weird. It's weird to see a PR firm bragging about talking about a case like this, a homicide case. And the PR firm was out there on Instagram sharing images and all of this stuff and saying, oh, look, like bragging about how well they've done. Look, they're trying to act like all of the earned media is media that they've actually developed. I hate that. A brand new PR company. They're acting like all the earned media that they've got. They're trying to make their company off of this case. Everybody's trying to get something off this Jordan Neely case. The family wants to get money. You know, they're going to go a civil suit when the criminal case doesn't pan out. They're going to try to get some money. The family's going to go after money. The family was nowhere to be around, who is so hell-bent on. They said they got to honor his memory. They want to honor Jordan Neely's memory. They just didn't care enough about his life to honor it. When he was apparently on the streets and homeless and all this other stuff. They didn't care about it then. They didn't care about his life then. So they're nowhere to be found. Now, on Law and Order, this was a really weird story. I was going to get to it a little bit later, but this is like last night. The way that it was described as a white supremacist U-Haul truck driver rammed his U-Haul truck into a barrier near the White House. He's a white supremacist. And it was, what are they calling it? The truck rammer, White House truck rammer. Yeah. That's how they were calling it. If you looked on social media, it showed the U-Haul truck near the security barrier at Lafayette Square near the White House. It showed the truck. It was all laid out. And then it's weird because laid out, Kane, did you see this? Laid out right there was a Nazi flag. What? Laid carefully out on the pavement. I'm sure it wasn't laid carefully out on the pavement. You know what probably happened, Kane? The wind probably blew it and laid it out without a nay a wrinkle, nary a wrinkle, right there on the
looked
pavement like
that.
Looked
like a brand new flag.
Brand new looking flag.
Brand spanking new.
Just brand new, right there laying on the pavement. Just, I mean, completely wonderfully stretched out, just all not a wrinkle. It's amazing how the wind can do that.
I'm sure the U-Haul is full of dangerous stuff, too.
Oh, my gosh. Probably all kinds of Nazi and white supremacist stuff.
Right. Oh, it was empty. Man, that's weird.
Are you sure? Maybe it was like a spell. I don't know. I mean, it's magic.
Totally empty truck.
Apparently, there was video of the moment that it crashed. And the white supremacist name, they identified him. They have a Missouri driver's license. The white supremacist, and I'm sure his name is Sai Varseth Kandula. You know what? That's probably white supremacist for something.
Whitest name I've ever heard.
I mean, it doesn't get much whiter than that. That's his, I mean, he's a white, wait, I'm sorry, are you saying that he's, are you joking? Are you saying that he might not be a white supremacist? Because that's what a white supremacist would say.
So you're saying Sai Varseth Kandula.
Mm-hmm.
Brown man is a white supremacist?
It could be the lighting. You don't know. He has brown hair, yes.
He could be really tan this time of year, probably.
He's a white supremacist, though.
Really?
Yeah, that's his Nazi flag laying out there on the ground. Total white supremacist. I mean, you know, Joe Biden out there saying, where are those Patriot Front people? Those guys that literally all look like they came out of the same, you know, they are clones. The Clone Wars. So this guy, he had a Missouri driver's license. And I mean, I don't know where he got his flag. Kane wants to know where he got his flag. I don't know. He's a 19-year-old. Yes, he is Indian American, but that's white supremacy.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
You sure?
Yeah. So some people are wondering, well, wait a minute, this guy, no, he's a white supremacist, but let's, you know, for this, just to entertain an argument, why would a guy who is an Indian American or South Asian have a Nazi flag, a swastika flag? Well, there was this thing, I don't know, when was it, some years ago, where the AP wrote about it. The article dates from November 27, 2022. Asian faiths try to save an old symbol corrupted by Hitler. The old symbol that they had was the swastika, and they said Hitler stole it and ruined it and corrupted it. Okay. And there's all of these, and it's people of Indian faiths. Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, all of these faiths. They were saying that Hitler stole this symbol and corrupted it. And so there was this like movement. I don't know if it's like still going on. It has Sanskrit roots, and it apparently means, in ancient, you know, or old definition, the mark of well-being. It's been used in prayers of one of the oldest Hindu scriptures. It's known as the Manji in Buddhism. It signifies Buddha's footsteps. It's used to mark the location of Buddhist temples. It's called the Wan in China, and it denotes the universe or manifestation and creativity of God. Its swastika is carved into the Jain's emblem for representing the four types of birth, embodied and embodied soul. So it's like, I mean, clearly there's like some history there. And apparently it's been used previously by Southwestern tribes, particularly the Navajo and the Hopi. To Navajo, it represented a whirling log, a sacred image, blah, blah, blah. So they were saying that Hitler had stolen it and corrupted it. So the reason I bring this up is because there's discussion as to why this white supremacist Indian American, why he would have this Nazi flag and what the point of it would be. I'm just like wondering, did he just have it in the truck and they pulled it out of the truck and then laid it on the ground? Like, I'm full of questions right now about how that happened. But anyway, yeah, he had the brand new Nazi flag. You know, I'm just, you know, I don't know. So, but here's the other thing. Isn't that kind of like, aren't you tampering with evidence if there's a Nazi flag in the back of the, truck and you take it out, which FUD went into the back of the truck and was like, "Hoover, take this out, lay here on the ground." Who was it that did that? I'm just wondering. Do we know where Peter Strzok was, by the way? Is he anywhere to be found? Just saying. I'm just going to say, there's like a lot of diversity in white supremacy lately.
Right.
It's an
understatement.
Kind of interesting. There's so much diversity within the white supremacist demo. Who would have thought? Who knew? Yeah, you know, but, you know, I mean, diversity, you know, I guess, you know, times are changing. You know, who knows? I was just wondering. Just going to put that down. Just put that out there. Just, you know. Whew. So, okay, I've got to make this make sense for me. All right, here's a story. It's a woke story. So this story, it was in the Publica. The way that I wrote it down is, a woman can be hospitalized after being sexually abused by a man who says he's a woman. The woman can seek help for that abuse. And then that same woman who went to the hospital to be hospitalized after being sexually abused by a man was reported to the police because she misgendered the non-binary man who abused her while in the hospital for the abuse.
That's not real.
That is an absolutely real story. No joke. Make it make sense. That's what I'm saying. Very confused here. And it's an actual story. It's in Derbyshire in the UK. So this woman, there was a big investigative news piece on this. She was sexually abused by a guy who identifies as a woman. Then she was hospitalized. She received treatment following the traumatic incident. And then she got a notice from the police because she misgendered him. And so now she's the bad guy? I mean, I just think that misgendering your abuser is probably the easiest thing you could do. We're gonna come back to this because this is wild. This is an actual real story. This is what's happening. This has gone off the deep end. It's entirely crazy. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I think it was extremely clever, and I really appreciate the NAACP's guidance on this issue. You know, I just took my family to spring break in Florida recently, and I think about all of the folks who traveled there for sun and joy and peace and restoration. And to be reminded that actually this is getting to the point where Florida is about to be a terrorist state to many of us here in America. Certainly as a lesbian, as a Black woman, I don't want to have anything to do with the place.
Oh, come on.
I wonder if she says that all the time. Like, she's at Walmart, like, checking out. Well, as a Black woman and a lesbian, I'm going to make this purchase here. As a lesbian Black woman, it's a Black lesbian. Check all these boxes. Just, you know, push that out there all the time. It's like, no, you don't, ma'am. You're not going to get a discount just because you're a Black lesbian. I don't. It's like, that's, I see people use their identity boxes like that all the time, and I wonder if that's what they're expecting. First off, this pundit, this commentator who was this on MSNBC? Mm-hmm. She took her entire family to spring break in Florida. I just know that, you know, going and spending oodles of money on spring break in a state that you think it was it not terrorist while she was there and only conveniently advantageously terrorist after she left? I've got a lot of questions. We've got a lot of questions about this.
It's like if I'm telling you about a restaurant I went to that was great, and then I'm like, don't go there.
Don't go there.
Do not go there. It's so dumb.
I mean, all of this is predicated, two quick things, on they're trying to say, oh, no, they're not teaching Black history. The Stop Woke Act, which is Florida law, literally mandates teaching Black history. So all of the people telling you that are evil, race-hustling liars, or they're morons. So you got to pick which one, because there's no gray area here. You're either a moron who's talking out of your backside about a law you didn't read, or you read the law, you know for a fact that it actually mandates the teaching of Black history and has now for, you know, how long. And you're lying to people because you are actually the racist in this scenario and you're trying to racially divide people based on a lie. Which one is it? Now, what people are upset about is queer theory. What does that have to do with Black history? Do you want your third grader to be taught about how females have sex with each other? Do you want your fourth grader to see pictures of how men have sex together? Because apparently, if you're against that, you're a racist. That's what this means. That's exactly what the NAACP is saying here. So I guess that there's no age restrictions. Are they for pedophilia? I'm just wondering, because that sounds like a pedophilia move. That's number one. Number two, as it pertains to the ridiculous lie about don't say gay, that had nothing to do with gay people. I realize that certain gay people want to literally make everything about themselves and that the world began the day they were born. But actually, this was about parents being able to approve of age-appropriate material in their kids' libraries that didn't have anything to do with academics. So, yeah, not everything is about you. We have a lot more on the way. Second hour. Apparently Maynard James Keenan turned stupid. It's really disappointing. I thought he was smart. I was wrong. I can say that because I was about his intelligence, I guess. We got more on that coming up. Mm-hmm. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And he's one of these guys who, you know, he's like Clarence Thomas, Black Republican, who believes in pulling yourself by your bootstraps rather than, to me, understanding the systemic racism that African Americans face in this country and other minorities. He doesn't get it. Neither does Clarence.
Right.
And that's why they're Republicans.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because no one understands what it means to be a Black man than this nasally voiced white woman who liked to dress in blackface often, except she was like really bad at it. I don't understand what in the sofa cushion fabric that she is wearing in that one shot. Juan's got it for the simulcast. Whew. That's how we're. Yeah, we're starting. We choose violence. We are starting that with our second hour. Ooh, that's Joy Behar. She knows better than. This white woman, this annoying white woman knows better than any Black man what it's like to be Black in America. She knows it so well. She was in blackface. She abused bronzer before there was bronzer to abuse. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch, you are, mean as all Hades curmudgeon today. Top of the second hour. I think it's just because there's an overload of stupidity. Just overloaded. We're going to get into it. But top of the second hour this Tuesday, Good to be with you. You can listen to the nationally syndicated radio show across the country. You can stream the radio show. You can watch the simulcast of the radio program on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. So they're upset. They're still complaining because there's a black conservative on the Supreme Court. They can't get over it. They've been upset over Clarence Thomas still. They're still mad over Clarence Thomas. They've been mad over Clarence Thomas since my mom was watching Designing Women, like back in the late 80s. I mean, how long can these bees stay mad? I'm just wondering. Like, how long can you stay mad? Jiminy Christmas. They're very upset. They were reacting to the whole Tim Scott thing. Oh, they don't know what it's like, excuse me, to be black in America, Joy Behar says. I mean, you know, I will say, she probably does have an insight on how difficult it has been for, you know, black Americans in this country, considering that she was probably one of the ones who was there. I mean, she is kind of clannish, so I guess she does have that perspective from that side, you know, so she kind of has it, because she knows what it's like to make someone's life a living hell, so she probably does get a little bit of how difficult it was for black Americans, you know, her being a racist white Democrat. Dana, you're full of invectives today. Yes, I am. Because I'm just tired of it. I'm just tired of these sorry-ass people. Golly, I'm going to get to it already because I can't. I'm about to go off. I'm going to try to be real nice about it. Okay, so one of the bands that I've always liked was Tool. And I have been able to look over Maynard James Keenan's endless verbal menstruations about how he doesn't like Jesus for years, right? Because I thought he was kind of a libertarian, right? I thought he was at least sort of sensible. I'm not like the left, where I have to go and check in a weird Portlandia episode and deem whether or not I can listen to this, eat this, read this, whatever, unless do your politics match mine? I make fun of wokery when they call cultural appreciation appropriation, right? Where, I mean, people told me before I've been on television, why are you wearing gold hoops? You know, only African women can wear gold hoops. I'm like, are you Sumerian? Because they invented it, so stop it! Anyway, so I don't get into that, right? So I've been able to overlook, and as I call them, the verbal menstruations of one Maynard James Keenan talking endlessly about, oh, here's my other song about not liking Jesus. I'm just mad about Jesus. He's not mad about me. And you get my idea. Anyway, there are some of these musicians that are like this. And I appreciate the musicality, but I kind of have to roll my eyes at the lyrics. You know, I've just... So anyway, there are a lot of people that are quite upset over, still they're upset, because we live in the stupidest age in human history. Some of the laws that they've passed in Florida, one particularly about the drag queen stuff. And so apparently Tool played Daytona night before last. And Maynard James Keenan showed up looking like Mika Brzezinski. Did you see it?
I did.
I'm not wrong, right?
No.
Totally not wrong. Anyway, he showed up in drag because he wanted to basically, he was protesting against the anti-drag law. Now, let's just stop right there. Let's just stop for one moment, okay? Suggesting that Florida's law is anti-drag is like saying that strip clubs that are 21 and over, because in Florida you have to be over 21 to get in a strip club, that's like saying that that's anti-stripper, because there's an age restriction. Are there strip clubs in Florida? Is Florida anti-stripper? But they do have an age restriction, correct?
True.
Does the age restriction make Florida anti-stripper?
Nope.
No. Does Florida have drag queens?
Yes.
Does Florida have age restrictions on adult-themed shows, i.e. strippers and drag? So does that make them, much like the stripping thing, does it make them anti-drag?
No.
So the age restriction has nothing with the anti.
That's correct.
These are just stupid people who are going out and saying stupid things because we live in the dumbest era of mankind. I thought he was smart. Right? Never meet your heroes. I never met him, but you know what I mean. We live in an absolute idiocracy. That's literally all this is. I mean, that's literally all this is. It's an age restriction. It's like saying, oh, Florida's anti-liquor because you have to be 21 and up to buy alcohol. They're anti-alcohol. Are people saying that Florida's a prohibition state? No. Is Florida a prohibition state? No. Does Florida have an age restriction on purchasing alcohol?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. It's interesting how they don't say that they're an anti-gun state. Considering that under Rick Scott and under weaker Republicans before Ron DeSantis and the conservative new revolution in Florida, they were trying to pass age restrictions on purchasing firearms in Florida. It's interesting how that age restriction didn't turn, according to the left, Florida into an anti-gun state. But oh my heavens, if you require an age restriction to go and see an adult-themed sexual performance of a man dressed as a woman, then somehow that means it's anti-drag. I mean, if you're going to disagree with something, then disagree with it. Don't be a moron. Don't be stupid like Maynard James Keenan. I'm just so tired of this. I mean, we live in an absolute idiocracy. And I'm disappointed because I thought that he was at least somewhat. I don't expect people to share my beliefs, but I expect you not to be barely sentient. You know what I mean? I expect you to be somewhat intelligent. I expect you to approach the issue with more than one brain cell. But unfortunately, I guess I'm asking too much in this era of stupidity, this idiocracy in which we find ourselves. Golly, maybe he can go back and write another song about how he's so mad at Jesus. Oh, because that's never been done before. It's so original and groundbreaking. Just done. Done with it all. Speaking of which, now, I've got some media for you. This chick, what's her face? Let me pull this up. Tara Palmieri, is that her name? I mean, I'm going to forget it in 5 seconds, so it's not really important to me that I have the pronunciation correctly because I just don't care. Anyway, this there was this piece that ran yesterday. Let me pull this up. Where this reporter was so upset, she went after, they wrote this like whole thing on DeSantis. Who does she write for? Oh, some stupid website. She it was her first personal observation. DeSantis's critics call him a pepper togger. She was saying that he's not ready. Oh, I know, Steve, what media outlet she's from. I just think it's stupid and not worthy of a mention. She was trying to argue that because Ron DeSantis wouldn't engage with her and answer her stupid questions, that it means that he's somehow not ready for press, or he's not ready for primetime, or he's bad with media or not prepared with media. Because see, they believe that they're super special. And if you don't lavish attention on them, you know, their mommies and daddies and mommies and mommies and daddies and daddies told them that they were super special, Kane, and that if you don't affirm the specialty of them, then you're unprepared for media. It's very simple. So she ran, I don't know what shoes she was wearing. A quick aside, can we stop with the platforms? You look like Clydesdales. It doesn't make your ankles slimmer. It doesn't make your legs look longer. It makes you look like a stumpy death dwarf who's stomping around in Clydesdale hooves. That's what it looks like. You look like a Clydesdale. You sound like a Clydesdale. And it's incredibly annoying when you're trying to ask a stupid question of a reporter and all we can hear are your heavy as hell Clydesdale feet clomp, clomp, clomping down the stairs. So, case in point, Tara Palmieri, whatever, she finds Ron DeSantis at some event and she follows him down the stairs. And she was like, I was so nice and I was asking him questions. He ignored them. He seemed almost to be running away from me. Can we play the audio of the questions, the hard hitting investigative news questions she was asking this one Tara Palmieri, the surreptitiously recorded audio? Listen to this.
Governor Sanders, you can talk to me. I'm also a person and one represents the press. I'm also Italian American like you. if that makes any difference to you at all, because clearly you don't see me.
Golly. I mean, that's why, ladies, you don't wear platforms. It's not exact. I'm almost more offended by the footwear than I am the question.
You sound like you're 10 pounds.
And it makes women, it makes your legs look dumpy. You look like you have Gimli legs when you wear platforms. Stop it. You look like damn horses. Stop it. Anyway, to my point. Did you hear the question she was asking? Yeah. What's your favorite Disney character?
Journalism.
What problem do you have with Disney? I'm a Italian American like you. Said journalism-ing. Those are bad questions, and you should feel bad for asking them because they're dumb. You know, if I were him, I would have thought, like, what in the centaur hell is chasing me down the stairs? What is this? That's what it sounded like. Stare upon Mary going down the stairs. I would have been like, what in the world? There's a damn centaur chasing us. We are in some sort of mythological hell. Get to the SUV. Although he didn't flee. He was walking and talking with someone. But she was like, I'm special. Answer my questions because I'm special. I'm special. Answer them. Those are dumb questions. He is way more disciplined than I do. Because I would have turned around and I would have immediately commented on her footwear. And then I would have torn her apart with her question. And that wouldn't have been fun for anyone. I'm just saying. But what gets me is this same press is absolutely silent about Biden's complete non-existent relationship with the media. But now they're flipping out because DeSantis ignored this dumb questioning from this lefty reporter clomping like a Clydesdale after him down the stairs, screeching about, what Disney character do you like? I would have turned around and said Bob Iger, and just to see what the reaction would be. But, you know, anyway, that's the thing, though. They believe that they're special. And if you don't treat them like that, then they're like, oh, well, you didn't answer a super important question. It's like, guess you're not right for media. Gosh, man. Anyway, we have more to come as we get moving. Speaking of which, because Biden claimed his son, the one that he lost, that he passed away from this brain disease, that he died in Iraq to a bunch of Marines. But I wonder what Disney character he likes.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I apologize to you guys. I wouldn't shut up last segment. It's my fault. All my fault. All right. So first up, a couple of things here. Oscar Mayer has renamed their truck. It's no longer the Wienermobile. It's no longer the Oscar Mayer Wiener. It's the Oscar Mayer Frank. I have no idea why. I don't think it has anything to do with wokery, though. Because originally, it was called Frank. It was literally called Frank Whistles. That's really literally what it was called initially. And then it was referred to as the Frankmobile. So I think they're just going back historically. And also, chroming is kids sniffing inhalants. They need to stop. It's killing a lot of kids, New York Post. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Now, there was that heart-stopping moment where he almost fell over coming down the stairs a day or two ago. He didn't use the railings. Jill wasn't there with him. Every time that happens, your heart is in your mouth because these things could be consequential. Is that a concern?
Well, I mean, it's a concern for anyone. And we've had presidents who've fallen before who were a lot younger. People didn't go into, you know, heart palpitations. But his age is an issue and people have every right to consider it.
I'm just wondering how you ask her this question. It's Hillary Clinton who is being asked about Joe Biden falling he was going down the stairs.
Sure.
Fell. What, wouldn't he? Going down the stairs and he fell. G7. Going down the stairs, like tripped, stumbled. How do you ask her this and not go, didn't you fall on your backside and lose a shoe in Manhattan? Yeah.
Carried into a van.
Yeah, you got carried straight the hell up into a van. Your Tory Burch flat was left there in the street. Can you tell us about that day? Why didn't that British fellow ask that question, Kane? So, former Madam Secretary, you also had your own share of falls. You fell down in the street and lost your flat, your Tory Burch ballet slipper on the side of the road. You were carried into a van by a team of your staff. Can you tell us about that day? They didn't. How do you bring that up and not ask her that? Just wondering. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this second hour. It is, they're bringing her out. I told Kane, I said, they're bringing Hillary Clinton out to talk about his age, because you can't dislike Hillary Clinton any more than you dislike her. There's, at some point, there's no more dislike out there. There's no more. The bucket is full. The cup runneth over. There's no more. So what do? Just dislike her more? No, there's no more. What did I just say? There's no more dislike. You can't dislike her more. She can go out there and say this stuff because they're not going to say anything about her. Because she'll kill you. Just, sorry. Foster you. You're going to get Vince fostered. I was murdered. Suicided. Just lay that out there. Because this is true, though. Okay, I want to, because we got some, I don't know, we've had some movement in the political primary, the GOP primary. There's a lot of people wondering if and when, you're going to have Ron DeSantis get involved, if he's going to declare. He's been changing some handles. I asked this question genuinely because I was very curious as to what people thought about the whole thing with Tim Scott being single. And I thought, and people got mad at me. Like for instance, this one guy, Troy, in my comments says, you're being a hypocrite for saying that someone that is different from you, that they must be questioned. First off, that sentence is not actually legible. That's not a literate sentence. And I like, most of the time people, if they disagree, that's just a stupid sentence. What does it have to do with hypocrisy? That would only make sense if I were like divorced or single myself. I mean, words have meanings. Let's remember that. I'll respond to that later. He probably won't comment again, though. But I think it's completely fair to ask this. Why does everybody get so butthurt when you ask a question? I honestly hate this modern society. You can't even ask a question without people on the right absolutely launching themselves into the volcano of PMS reactions. It is insane. You can't bring up the right can be just as bad as the left, and you know it. You can't ask a single question without people like freaking out. I think it's completely fine to ask, is it weird that he's single? I'm genuinely curious. I mean, I was interested in having an actual conversation about it. And there were a few people that were on, my side of thinking in terms of constitutional conservatism that are like, yeah, I think this is an interesting thing to talk about. It has nothing to do. By the way, I'm not saying that he's gay or anything else like that for all the people who apparently are limited in thinking. Because he was asked, this is why I bring it up. This is why I bring it up. When he first started running for office, and he seems like a nice guy, but when he first started running for office, he ran, literally advertised himself as the 30-year-old virgin. He did. And no one else did that. There wasn't anyone in the media that asked him that. I wrote a piece and I've linked this in my piece that I wrote. He was the one who made that a big deal. And then later on, and this is why people got really mad about this, and this is why I actually brought this up in the first place. There was a Washington Post reporter who is writing, I think, something early on about 2024. And they, after Scott announced, they brought up this story where a few years ago, because Tim Scott's 57 years old now, when he was in his 40s, this reporter said that he had asked him, well, you started your career talking about values and morality and ethics. Are you still a virgin? And apparently Tim Scott was like, you know, I'm not going to continue this question. Apparently the answer was no, though. So I'm just saying, no one else made that an issue because no one knew. He put that out there. Now, that may have been a bad move for him to have done, but you can't get mad at anybody in the media for asking. And I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry at all. We should ask these questions. People sit here and go, oh, their personal lives are none of our business. I beg to differ. How fast we've changed from Clinton to now. Like, what happened with that? I always look at it like this. If a man can't handle his own home, he can't be handling the White House. Sorry, he can't. And the reason why I bring this up, and I'm not talking about kids or anything else. George Washington famously didn't have any children of his own. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is commitment. And another way of gauging someone's character. That's what I'm talking about. For the people who need, you know, the drive-bys who need cliff notes for basic conversation. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Because look at it like this. I was thinking about it. I find it concerning for a couple of reasons. Now, here's one. If he were to become president, which I don't think he has a shot, but I just, for the sake of discussion, I think it presents a way for him to be compromised. What if he were to date or marry on the campaign trail? I mean, it seems really unwise to subject a new relationship like that to the fishbowl existence of the White House or the strain of a campaign. I mean, have you guys seen, and I had this link in my piece on Substack at Chapter and Verse. Have you seen the before and afters of everybody in the White House? Everybody like going back to the beginning of, you know, actual photographs.
Yeah.
Holy cow. It sucks the life out of you.
Literally.
Oh my gosh. They go in, they got a full head of hair. They maybe have a couple of grays. They have fat cheeks. They come out and they look like pieces. They look like they're beef jerky and their hair's falling out and it's all white. That, like, what happened? They're so stressed out. Can you imagine? By the way, the most perilous time for a marriage is the first 7 years. I'm just saying. Or if he's a single POTUS. Now, we haven't had a single president since James Buchanan. He was our first and only bachelor president. But what, like, if they try to date, how do you surreptitiously get a lady up in a White House? Do they have to sign an NDA? Like, how does that work? Here's the other thing. One of the ways, and you can get mad at this or not, but be honest. One of the ways that society judges whether or not a man is successful is by the family that he's built. Just as we also gauge his character by his choice of wife. Ah, like if his wife is a bully and she needles him constantly, if she's, you know, if he's a pushover, if his kids have no discipline or respect, or if his wife is, you know, like him and his wife fight, or, you know, if the wife is mean or whatever, then you're going to think like you're going to wonder whether or not he's going to be able to stand up to geopolitical enemies if he can't stand up to a wife at home. I'm just saying. And some can wonder how family can be so important if a person who is seeking the top job in the land could not temper their ambitions to start one themselves. There were a lot of people asking this question, and I saw this all over social media, and I was incredibly disappointed to see some of the reaction to the questions. Like, people genuinely asking questions about this. We have a culture war happening on the right, within the right. You can't even ask questions about this because we're trying so hard apparently to flatter, modern cultural secularism that we can't even ask a question about this. I mean, we're protesting secular society's declared war on the nuclear family, on fathers and on men. But holy hell, you can't even ask a question about a single 57-year-old man and if that's going to be a concern for voters going into 2024. Apparently you can't reconcile those two things for me. You see what I'm saying here? This is where I have that. I mean, are we really going to downplay the importance of the very building block of society to satisfy modern secularism? To satisfy our current cultural temperature. Are we not supposed to ask this question? People go, well, it's his business. Like hell. Like hell. You're running for the top office in the land. Guess what? All your business is our business. Why is it? Because you have the authority to send our children to war. because you have the authority to tax us to death, because you have a lot of authority. We are putting our futures and our livelihoods in your hands. So there is nothing that is off limits. And if you think there should be, then you are already saying that you are not up for the job. The end. Now, I think that a lot of the questions that came from this were actual, like mine is genuine, you know, I'm inquisitive about, I'm curious about this. I know that humans have a tendency to trust the familiar. Do you know any committed bachelors in your life? People who've never had like publicly committed relationships? Now, and I know some people were bringing up, I don't want to get into, you know, I know you don't want a sermon, but some people were like, well, Paul says it's better. Actually, that's not what he says. If you actually read 1 Corinthians, and I address that in the post. I mean, he wasn't advocating for the single life in 1 Corinthians as though it was somehow better. In verse 7, he made it very clear that singleness as it pertains to celibacy is akin to a vocation and rather a personal decision that was brought about at the time. If you all remember the time in which he was talking about this was a time of immense suffering and persecution for himself. So it actually was more advantageous for him to be single in devotion to his duty than to have a spouse. If you can live a godly life single, lead it singularly. If you can lead such a godly life as a married person, then marry or stay married. Paul does not lift up one better or more functional than the other. So let's get that straight right there. There's a lot of people who need to reread 1 Corinthians. Because I saw really nice, sweet people asking a simple question and then have their heads ripped off on social media. That was, again, really disappointing to me. We have every right to ask this question. You have every right to ask this question and not apologize for asking this question. You have every right to expect an answer to this question. Do not get it twisted, friends. These people are auditioning for the top job in the land to have authority over your life, and you are going to be made to feel bad because you're asking about personal commitments in their life? Oh, no. That is not how this works. You have every right to ask. It's your responsibility. That's just the way it is. Now, whether, like I said, Washington was, you know, he was single. He didn't have kids. He was with Martha Washington. She had a child, I believe, previously, and he kind of, you know, adopted her child, but he had no children of his own. There was a commitment there between, and I think that's something that is used to judge someone's character. So do you feel that you can make, can you make that decision? Does it affect you? Especially when we're talking about defending the building blocks of society and we're talking about the importance of families, etc. Can you believe that someone can share that if that has not been a priority in their life? And it's an honest question. For people who want to see some sort of judgment in there, then that's on your heart. And that's something that you have to deal with. But there are people asking genuine questions and they deserve answers. And they have every right to ask them.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
It's one of those days where Florida Man seems like the sanest person around. All right. So first up, this is a crazy story. It really makes me scared of any bodies of water. I read this. I saw a photo of this morning. It was at a Port Charlotte. A Florida man lost his arm. He was attacked by a 10-foot gator Sunday morning. Dang. I did not send you guys the photo because it is crazy. A 23-year-old man. He was in a pond behind the Banditos Bar in Port Charlotte. A pond. I told you. You guys thought I was exaggerating. Those non-Floridians. All the Floridians in our listening area there are like, we knew. Officers with Florida Fish and Wildlife, they were trying to wrangle. It was a giant gator is how it was described. The customer said that the alligators, you know, have often appeared at the pond near the bar in the past. Apparently, it's been out like for over 20 years. And they said there's one who's huge and he's been there for that long. And they said that it's gotten problematic because people keep feeding them, like visitors keep feeding the gators in the pond. So they said that the feeding alligators is illegal because of stuff like this. So this guy was back there and he was attacked and ends up having his lost his arm. So he's like, he's hospitalized still, but that's crazy. Yeah. So you can't be feeding. You cannot feed the gators. That's not something you need to be doing this or I don't know what this guy did, though, to get an iguana in his toilet bowl. John Riddle, 58, he went to the bathroom at Hollywood, Florida, in his home, and an angry iguana, he lifted the seat, and an angry iguana hissed at him. I would have fallen to the floor dead. Right. An angry, you lived, imagine this, you lift the toilet seat, and an angry iguana pops out and hisses at you. He goes, it was like Godzilla in my toilet. That's literally what he said. That was his actual quote. He said he took a picture of it, and it was mid hiss, and it was in his toilet. This is like the stuff of nightmares. And then it tried to swim, guys. He's got a picture of it trying to swim back down the drain, so they had to call Florida Fish and Wildlife, and I think they were able to get it out. But sometimes that can happen in Florida. Are you serious? How often? Stay with us.
I'm declaring this state of emergency because you need to know what's happening. If you care about public schools in North Carolina, it's time to take immediate action and tell them to stop the damage that will set back our schools for a generation.
Oh boy.
Here's what's happening in the next few weeks. Their private school voucher scheme will pour your tax money into private schools that are unaccountable.
That's like, he doesn't understand exactly how that works. So that is North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. Roy Cooper saying that he's declaring a state of emergency over the school choice bill. And the school choice bill is allowing you to spend your money at a school that you think is going to best educate your kids and not be hamstrung by your zip code. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. We got our friend Andy McCarthy coming up later on in the program. Yeah, he declared a state of emergency yesterday. He's trying to stop the state legislature from passing this bill. And he said that it was time to declare a state of emergency. There's no executive order like with a hurricane or pandemic, but it's no less important. And it is, this is, you're abusing, it's abuse of authority from the executive branch to try to push emergency power. There, the problem is that they are losing the control of those dollars. You know, the vouchers, when he said, oh, taking your tax dollars, it's not your tax dollars, it's their tax dollars. It's each individual family's tax dollars. Do you realize how much some schools per student pay for education? I mean, it is, it's mind-blowing. Public education, and a lot of times, really, the cost per student exceeds that of a private school. What state was I in? I'm pulling this up. I think this is from a couple of years ago. I don't think it's actually changed much. It was something almost like $13,000 per pupil spending by state for public education. And then you think about what you get from it, right? Think about what you get from that and how much money is being spent. It is shocking. On average, it's about $12,000, a little over $12,000 per student. Now, my kids, when I homeschooled my two boys up until, fifth grade and then eighth grade. And then they went to a private Christian school. That's literally the amount of a private school tuition. No joke. That's how much you're paying in tax per student. And when my kids, my youngest son graduated this year, every student, they all had excellent grades. Everybody was getting scholarships. They were working hard. They had high GPAs. You know, my son, he graduated with a cumulative 4.3, his honor society scholars diploma, the whole nine yards. And that is, I mean, I'm not kidding you. That's how much that tuition is. That's the average. That's crazy. Think about that. It's actually considered to, and that's average. Now, there's some conflicting numbers because the Education Data Initiative says it's actually more like 16,000. If it's $16,000 per student, that's more than I paid per student for my private school tuition. That's how much in tax you're spending per pupil. You could have that money and actually send your kids their books and everything, all of that. That's insane. That's insane. And then look at what you get for it. I was looking as to Chicago for, yeah, and Lorraine, who is a contributor over at Chapter and Verse, over at Substack, and moderates the YouTube discussion. She noted that Baltimore City school budget is $21,000 per student this year. That's the cost of a college tuition. That's college tuition payment. That is almost double what I paid for. I'm not even exaggerating. That's almost double what I paid for private school tuition for one kid. Wow. That's one student. That's in Baltimore. Now look at what are their test scores in Baltimore. Look in Chicago. Look at this. I don't know how I have this tagged. Chicago spending per pupil for public school education. Oh my gosh, I need to hold on to something. Oh my gosh, guys, you want to know what it is in Chicago? $29,000 per student.
Come on.
That is the center square. They said in 2013 it was about $13,200 for each student. Now it's $29,400 for each student. And you want to know the sad thing? Why I bring this up is in Chicago, there was a story out this year talking about the crisis that they're having. Democrats are sounding the alarm. 55 schools report no proficiency in math or reading. And it was an Illinois state senator named Willie Preston, father of six. He said there were 22 schools that had zero students who could read at grade level in Chicago. He said another 33 schools claimed that no students could perform math at grade level. Statewide, there were 53 schools that reported no students who were proficient in math, another 30, zero students able to read at grade level. This after Chicago ranks as one of the highest cities in the nation for spending per pupil. $29,400 spending per pupil. And the reading and math proficiency are that low. So what's happening, folks? And these same Democrats who took the budget for public school in Chicago, and you can repeat this, as Lorraine noted, in Baltimore, you can repeat this in St. Louis, you can put this, these same Democrats that have inflated the budget from, and this was 2013, $13,200 for each of those students, to now $29,400 for each of the students. The proficiency is flatlined. Lorraine noted that only 7% of students were proficient in math in Baltimore City. This is after they spent an ungodly amount of money. $21,000, that's insane. So you have Roy Cooper, who's here yelling, oh, we got to have a state of emergency to fight against school choice. They want to keep this as the status quo. This is what school choice is about. You have parents who are stuck in these school districts. Their tax dollars have to go to the school. Their kids got to go to the school. And because they have to pay so much in tax to that school, they can't send their kids to a private school. All the money that they would use for private school tuition is held captive by the public school. And look at the reading proficiency. Look at the math proficiency. Meanwhile, they keep getting more and more of their tax dollars. What do they got to show for it? School choice is parents getting that their tax money back. So Roy Cooper's lying. I don't know his background, Kane, but he sounds like he's got a silver spoon kind of dude. Yep. These parents get their tax dollars that they would spend in education back in the form of a check. There's their private school tuition. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to tell you, when we moved here and we were looking at a couple different Christian private schools, and we were like, we will sacrifice whatever to make this happen. I don't care what we got to do. If we got to be down to one car, whatever we got to do to make it happen, we're going to make it happen. There's not a private school that I looked at in my area that got anywhere near what those were charging per pupil. Holy wow. School choice holds educators accountable. You got good teachers out there and you got bad teachers. And I don't want to have to sit here and say this. I just assume everyone's smart and they understand it. But y'all know that there are people who abuse. They get in there and they get their tenure and you can't get them out. You got, you know, the Randy Weingartens out there of leadership. You all know this. When I was younger, I remember in my elementary school, and this was, gosh, late 80s. I started junior high in the early 90s. Late 80s, early 90s. Graduated in the 90s. When I was in elementary school, we all wanted to have the younger teachers because they were more fun. They were more inventive. We had, I can't remember her last name. But she always had a big blonde blowout. And her first name was Monica. And she was fresh out of college. She got a teaching job and she was a great teacher. And whenever we would take like these different, like we would all have to take these different unit tests on social studies, whatever. And then in the hallway, outside of each classroom, they would post, you know, like the test scores and the stickers of, you know, the highest performing students in her classes. She had more students out in front of hers than the other teachers had in front of theirs. Now, there was some drama in our school because some of the older teachers who had been there for a little while, and there was one fifth grade teacher who hated, everyone was terrified of her. Nobody wanted her. She kicked the bucket before I got up there. But I just remember there was a lot of drama because some of the older teachers did not like her. And from what I understood, there was like an effort to try to get her reassigned. And they actually told her she couldn't do some of her other funner stuff in class because apparently it was upsetting the other. I'm not even exaggerating. It was upsetting other classrooms. And other students in other classrooms would go and tell their parents, oh my gosh, and Miss, and I can't remember her last name, but I'm going to call her by her first name. Miss Monica's class, they were doing, you know, like they had math relays that they did. Math relays. How fun is that? She made learning the most. I did not have her, and I was so jealous of all my friends who did, because she had fun incentives. She was really innovative with how she approached her classes, and she ended up being told by some. Finally, they told her she had to stop the math relays and some other things. And the way that one of my friend's mom said it was because some of the teachers were jealous. No joke. Her students were performing better than the students in the other classes of the same grade. There were four separate classes of that grade. So that's what I'm talking about. You get some really good teachers in there, and, you know, because of they don't have the seniority or whatever, and they're the ones who, you know, they can't show up, the ones who are there, you know. But this is insane. This is what school choice is. School choice is giving parents the power so that they can get that kind of good education. Why should someone be limited to their zip code? Why shouldn't someone have the kind of education that my kids had just because of their zip code? Their tax dollars are spending the exact same amount of money for private school tuition. In some cases, more than I even paid for my private school tuition. How is that? How in the world? And I never say this, but that is not fair. Because you are chaining people to failing schools because they prioritize those schools and the bosses that run them more than they do those families and those kids. That is shameful. That's a civil rights issue. That man, shame on Roy Cooper. What an embarrassment. Oof.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently, breaking news, Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce his 2024 presidential run tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern in a Twitter Spaces interview with Elon Musk. It's going to be very interesting. That's a smart way to announce it, too, by the way. Very, very interesting. So, of course, we're going to bring you all of that. That'll be fun to watch. All right. Also, the Target CEO is defending the Alphabet-friendly tucking stuff, saying that the social media uproar over their tuck-friendly kids' clothing, saying that it's the right thing for society and these products are good for business. Yeah, so, you know, doing that for kids is good for his business. Wow. Where's the left when they talk about soulless CEOs? Because I think I found you one. I think I got you one. There you go. Just saying. Ooh, boy. Italy is freaking out over the surge in pasta prices. Apparently, it's actually like prompting crisis meetings in Italy, and people are calling for a strike. Oh, no. Pasta prices rose 17.5% in March, 16.5% in April, according to Italy's Ministry of Business, which cited data. They said the jump is double that of Italy's consumer price index figures. Elevated retail prices are because people are selling their pasta stocks, which were made when raw materials were a higher cost. And wow. So what is that? What? There better not be no. I have to have my pasta. I got to have pasta. Come on. That's horrible. Washington Examiner, American credit card debt could hit $1 trillion this year. $1 trillion. People are turning to plastic amid stubbornly high prices thanks to Bidenflation. U.S. credit card debt was $986 billion in the first quarter of this year. That was according to the latest report on household debt from the Federal Reserve. The balance total was the same as the previous quarter's high, but now there's more than a 17% jump, and now we could be looking at $1 trillion. Wow. Balances are high, a 20% hike compared to the same time last year, as inflation has risen to 40-year high levels. So people are using credit to help offset that invisible tax of inflation. So coming up, our friend Andy McCarthy joins us on the Durham Report and the FBI inflating their domestic terror numbers. Stay with us.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The president has made it very clear that he would like to have a bipartisan resolution to this. He says that, knowing full well as I do, that the 14th Amendment is still there, and as President of the United States, he has some authority to use it.
That's not really, it's not really how that works. We talked about that yesterday. That was James Clyburn discussing one of the tactics that Democrats are flirting around with in order to get what they would like for this debt ceiling debacle. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen to the radio program from coast to coast. You can also stream it, and you can watch the simulcast of the program as well. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. That would be one of the worst solutions to this crisis I can imagine. And on this issue, plus the Durham Report, as well as the FBI inflating some numbers for domestic terrorism, we go to our very good friend, Andy McCarthy, bestselling author. He's also one of the bylines at National Review, contributing editor. And you can watch him on Fox News. And he's former chief assistant U.S. attorney. And you might remember the book that he had, Ball of Collusion. Great book. You should have it. Andy, always so good to have you. I just kind of have to get your legal eagle response to James Clyburn pushing this, because you would think with some other Democrats not on board and people like Janet Yellen even warning that this is not the best idea and it could have some catastrophic consequences, that they would maybe back away from this a little bit, but not yet, it seems.
Yeah, well, Dana, I think they're out there using this rhetorically as a negotiation tactic. I don't think anybody really believes this is true. Even Biden and Yellen the last 2 days, fainting that they, you know, had this authority, also said, but, you know, there isn't time for us to invoke it at this point anyway. And it's so patently illegal. You know, I mean, they keep saying that the spending is authorized by law and therefore we have to pay it. And I keep wondering, isn't the debt ceiling authorized by law?
Right.
In fact, the last time it was authorized by law, it was signed into law by none other than Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall him making the slightest peep that it might be unconstitutional. So I'm a little bit puzzled about how it's not a law that he's taken a constitutional oath to enforce faithfully, which is a lot more than you can say for spending, especially if Congress hasn't upped the government's credit card. Which is what it takes to authorize spending when you have a deficit. But I guess, you know, all these legal questions are very interesting to people like me for, like, you know, law school exams and stuff like this. I have a practical question. Who's going to buy the Biden bonds? You know, let's say they do it. Who is going to buy a bond that hasn't been authorized by Congress?
That's the million-dollar question. I don't know who would.
Well, it's actually the $31.4 trillion question. But who, if they're not going to, if no one would buy these, then what's the point? What are we arguing about? You know, it's just like it's another iteration of our unseriousness. I mean, it's moronic to think anyone would even think about buying this.
It seems as though a desperate move because they realize, you know, especially after a bill passed the House and, you know, they got to come to the table and have the discussion about it. It just seems really like a last-ditch effort to try to not negotiate. That's the only thing that I can think of. Of course, you know, abusing authority, whether it's through the CDC or anything else, hasn't gone well with them, or well for them, I should say. Speaking of which, abusing authority, I wanted to ask you about, and we're going to get into the Durham report. This kind of goes into it. People are very suspicious and distrustful of our agencies, particularly the FBI. And you have a great piece just outright called Democrats Cook the FBI's Books on Domestic Terrorism. I know that you had gotten into this before. You wrote, I think, a couple of years ago, another piece similar to this. And you were explaining, and this is going along with the House Oversight Committee and Jim Jordan and others who have pointed out that, you know, there's after all of the discussion from the Biden administration about the biggest threats of, you know, of terrorism against, you know, the here in the country. Now we have this question of whether or not some of these numbers were actually authentic or whether they were inflated for the purpose of this narrative. I don't even know how this goes, Andy, how it takes place as long as it has without it being caught or any accountability. I mean, I don't really have any words. I just continually am shocked by what's coming out of this bureau.
Yeah, I think part of it, Dana, is that it is so shocking that people, you know, when you first hear it, you act like I acted when it was first suggested to me that the Bureau would take a screed of opposition research that it hadn't corroborated, mm-hmm. slap a caption on it, and swear to it under oath in the FISA court. When I first heard that, I said that was the kookiest thing I ever heard, and that the people who were saying it would end up, you know, looking like the tinfoil hat crowd, and turned out it was completely right. So a lot of this stuff is just, I think it defies what we think are the lowest levels of outrageous behavior that they would engage in. But what they have been doing, and they really started this before the Capitol riot, mm-hmm. was to try to change the definition in federal law of what domestic terrorism is, to actually insulate and undercount things like jihadism and other, you know, left-wing uses of force, and home in only on white supremacism, order the FBI and the Homeland Security Department to ratchet up their investigations of white supremacy on the notion that it was the equivalent of what is domestic terrorism as the United States threat environment exists today. And then what we saw in this hearing last week, where the whistleblowers testified, is that they're inflating the numbers. And just to make people understand how this works, when I ran the Blind Shea case back in the 90s, it was a three-year investigation, right? We ran it out of one FBI office in New York. And what typically happens in a long investigation is you send out leads if you have a case where there's evidence or witnesses or what have you in other districts around the country. And then the agents in those districts follow up the leads, and everything gets forwarded back to the one place where the case is taking place. What they've done with the Capitol riot is it's located in the Washington field office of the FBI because it's being prosecuted in the District of Columbia. But instead of just sending out leads, they're sending out directives to other FBI offices around the country to open cases. So that what happens is, because they have like 49 different states that have some people came to the Capitol that day, they now say they have domestic terrorism cases in 49 states. So, for example, January 6th, you take a bus from, say, Minnesota to Washington, and, you know, amble through the Capitol, not breaking a window, not hitting a police officer, but like you have your selfie out, you're walking through the Capitol, you're in there for, you know, 10 minutes and then out. They have a domestic terrorism case in Minnesota on you, even if in Washington you've only been charged with loitering or some other misdemeanor.
That's crazy.
So that's what they're doing. And they're telling everyone that this goes to the Democratic narrative that white supremacism, which is their code for, you know, basically Trump voters, are the biggest threat to national security and to our democracy. And they're pushing the FBI to try to underwrite that claim by the way it keeps its books. And now I think, Dana, that it's even worse than what I wrote the other day, because we just got a report from the FISA court about these 280,000 communications that they shouldn't have access, but they did access. When you read the opinion from the FISA court, it looks like the thing that most drove that was the Capitol riot. So I think they're even using FISA to try to push this narrative. It's unbelievable.
Wow. And the fact that they had to inflate it, the fact that there wasn't enough and they had to reclassify cases because the Bureau wasn't finding enough. I mean, that alone should tell you. Then it's not actually a big threat if they're having to manufacture cases.
Yeah, well, when I was doing jihadist cases in the 90s, you could tell that we actually had jihadist cases because every now and then you'd hear like, and people would die.
Yes.
You know? That was not something that was manufactured. It was something that you needed only open your eyes to see that it was there. And they didn't want to see.
Yeah.
But this isn't there, so they need to invent it.
We're talking with our friend Andy McCarthy, his book, Ball of Collusion. Last, the Durham report, I've been just chomping at the bit to ask you about this, and you've written some really great pieces about this, analysis of this. One of the things that really, because I read the Durham report, and I think it was, I can't remember if it was like page 101 or 102, but the two, they had this excerpt of these two agents. One was, I guess, the case agent for Crossfire Hurricane, and the other was also within the FBI, but on a different specialty, different task. And they were having a discussion about whether or not they could trust the sourcing for what they were looking at, whether or not they could trust what the sourcing was. And they actually cited the fact that, well, these news reports out, the news reports that was based on, as you said, the discredited, unvalidated, and unverified by the FBI oppo that Hillary Clinton and the DNC, their campaigns paid for, that was being presented to these FBI agents without even them knowing, which kind of gets into how there's this huge gap between the rank and file and the leadership and really purpose, a gap of, for the lack of a better way to put it, purpose, where leadership looks like they're weaponizing and politicizing this office. And then you have rank and file that, you know, they were trying to do their due diligence, but they were only given oppo research that had been laundered through the press so as to present some sort of, you know, evidentiary, some basis through which to get this FISA warrant. I wanted to get your kind of thoughts on this and what that means really for the future of the Bureau, because I can't imagine, if we don't have any trust in the Bureau, I can only imagine what some of the rank and file agents on the ground, what they think of their superiors.
Yeah, I think that's right. And look, this FISA report that we've just gotten isn't going to make that any better. You would never, Dana, in any other context except here where headquarters was running an investigation, can you imagine you have a case where you have FBI agents, let's say, who investigate the mafia or some organized crime thing. Can you imagine that two of them sitting around saying, gee, I wish we could trust the sourcing. I wish we could talk to a witness maybe and see if this really, that would never happen, right? But the thing is, these agents who are professional investigators felt that they were not in a position to do this because this investigation was taken over by headquarters. So this, as somebody said the other day, I think this was the best analogy of it, this train was coming down the track. Mm-hmm. So their job was to get out of the way because they were powerless to do anything other than complain about it. And I actually feel good about the fact that there were so many good, decent, hardworking agents who just said, this ain't right. This is just just is wrong from soup to nuts, and it was.
So where would the accountability be for this? Because I know you had said that it doesn't necessarily violate a criminal statute. It doesn't meet that measure. But where, because everyone else is like, well, if they can get away with that, what can't they not get away with? So where would the accountability fall?
Yeah, you know, what I think Chris Ray would say about that, not that he's the most credible guy right now, but I think what he would say and what he has said is that you may notice that none of the people who were running this investigation work here anymore, that they've drummed them out and they've made changes. The problem is they drummed them out really quietly. Because the Bureau is, of all the agencies in government, I've always thought the FBI was the most self-conscious about its reputation. Mm-hmm. So when it should have tried to show people that it was cleaning house and getting serious about doing things the right way, they instead quietly kind of pushed everyone out. So the public isn't moved by that because they see these guys are on CNN and with book contracts and all this. They failed up, right? So it's not like they've been held accountable. And then the other thing Ray says is we've changed a lot of the procedures since then. And that sounds good. And they have changed some procedures. But I have to say, when I was a prosecutor, and this is now, I left 20 years ago, but still, you know, these procedures that they've changed now weren't in effect. I never met an agent who didn't know that you're not supposed to bring to a court raw intelligence that you haven't corroborated and swear to the truth of it when you had reason to believe it wasn't accurate. So like, what training made them think that was okay?
Yeah.
I never met an agent in 20 years who thought it was okay to bring inaccurate information to a court that you hadn't investigated.
That's unbelievable. Well, I mean, I feel like this is going to continue unfolding for quite some time. Our friend Andy McCarthy, his book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. As always, Andy, we so appreciate your insight. Thank you so much for your time, my friend. Good to talk with you.
Thanks, Dana.
Of course.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
So make sure you sign up for the Substack Chapter and Verse. There's a lot of stuff going to be kicking off tomorrow. You have apparently DeSantis is going to be announcing tomorrow. That's the word. It seems pretty credible. I believe it. It's going to happen tomorrow. And that's going to be at like, what, around 5-something on the spaces for Elon. Just if you're like, well, Dana, I can't listen. You know I'm going to be playing it for you on the show. So chill. You're going to hear it. It'll be out there. I'll send it to you in a newsletter. It's gonna be all good. That's why you need to sign up for the Chapter and Verse. That's Substack. And Lorraine's got a great piece up there about the 14th Amendment. Ridiculousness from Democrats. Not going to happen. All right. So I have more. I'm going to have to save the Adidas thing for tomorrow. Today's stupidity.
Yeah, there's way more news than time today. All right. According to Biden, Secretary Buttigieg was out there talking today,
and
he says it's cheaper to fill up a car with electrons than gas, which is a lie. Listen to that.
But also note that we do careful cost-benefit analyses on regulations related to the efficiency of gas cars, and those rules have saved Americans huge amounts of money in terms of gas and diesel costs.
What?
And, of course, making EVs more affordable will also make it easier for more Americans to take advantage.
Oh, would you just stop? It's not cheaper, and it won't be cheaper.
His name in Pig Latin is Udibe Usje.
And plus, our grid can't handle it.
I know, but you know what? Vice President, Secretary Newman, whatever, Admiral of Camp Wimitaka Fleet, Booty Juice can. Folks, back with you tomorrow.